I try to encourage him all the time because he could do very well up here, you know, and we all know that and that sort of thing. And, you know, with the different elements of the service today, let me just say briefly that, yes, it is Memorial Day weekend, and one of the moving experiences for me was when I was in the Philippines, when I was taken to, and I forget the official name of it, but the burial site where the Americans that fought in the Philippines are buried. And I was taken, it's an awesome experience. It's so quiet. And all you do is walk and you think, you know, about these men and these women who were on these shores and what they encountered and that sort of thing, just like Arlington, you know, Seminary. And there's a line in one of our songs, songs of our country, you know, more than life their country loved. And you wonder if we still have that today, you know, among many people, that you love your country more than life, that you would go do this. Bonnie and I come from military families, and we see the pictures and that sort of thing, whether it was World War II or Korean War, and it just goes on and on and on. And I was one of the rare ones that wasn't in the military, not because I tried to avoid it. When I was of age, it was the Vietnam War, and there was a draft. And that's when, if your number was called, you went. And I was very high. My birth date was very high in the draft, but I had entered Johnson Bible College, not thinking at all about avoiding the draft. That wasn't even on my mind. Most people, even myself, couldn't believe I was even going there. That might be true today. So, you know, where'd this guy come from? And I remember, you know, just early on, my first year there, I think it was in September, so I was just starting school. My number was called. And, you know, I was told to go, you know, into wherever it was in Knoxville and go through the physical and on and on and on. And I felt, okay, I'm going, you know, and I waited and I waited and they never called. I guess I wasn't the physical specimen I thought I was. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. But I think one of the things I've always regretted to a great degree is I didn't try. You know, I could have been a chaplain maybe. You know, and I think that's one of the things maybe I've regretted, that because these people are to be honored for their service and what they've done. And it's a sad thing, you know, that you think over now 71 years of life, can hardly remember a time that this country has not been at war. Constantly at war. And you can find a few years here and there where you can see that, you know, we're not doing that, but here we are again, you know, going to war, putting other people's kids, you know, in danger. 71 years of life, and we can't solve the problem. You know, when you think about how senseless war is, it's just plain senseless. You know, it comes from an attitude, I think, well, James says, you know, that people are, it's like this world is so important and they think this is the pie and this is the only thing that there is, and everyone wants a bigger slice of the pie and they fight over it. And we have a line, this is the last thing I'm going to say, we have a line of politicians down in Washington, this is all they know, whether they're Republican or Democrat, this is all they think about. Because there's money behind it. They never resolve it. The UN is worthless. And then they blame God, you know, when they come down to it. It doesn't make any sense at all. So I do recognize the freedom that we have. We ought to cherish it. I wish more people did. There's people that died for it, you know, as Sam talked about. And Sam, that was excellent. So I think I better move on with what I came to talk about. So as you see me this summer and starting today, I'm just going to preach on some subject matters and that sort of thing. And I'd like us to entertain a question this morning. What brings a smile to the face of Jesus? What brings a smile to the face of Jesus, to the face of God? Maybe that's a question you've asked before. I never did. It's just recently that I've asked that question. I actually wrote it in my journal, and that's where this sermon comes from, a journal entry. You know, what brings a smile to the face of Jesus? It never dawned upon me to ever ask that question. Maybe you have. Maybe it's dawned upon you, but never dawned upon me to think about that. You know, what brings a smile to the face of Jesus? I suppose if I sat and pondered it, I could come up with a whole list of ideas of what might bring a smile to the face of Jesus, and that list probably would be pretty good. And you could come up with a list of your own of what you think are some things that would bring a smile to the face of Jesus. And fortunately, somebody thought about that question. They must have asked the same question. They thought about it. I mean, they didn't say that they asked the same question, but from what they presented and what I saw, I have to think that they must have had that question in mind, because when I saw it, it captured me. And I mentioned this a few sermons back, and so I'll mention it again, that it's, I'm not usually, and Bonnie knows this, and maybe you're the same way, I'm not usually a fan of biblical movies. They don't always intrigue me and that sort of thing, because I sit there and I think, oh my gosh, you know, did they ever read, you know, what they're supposed to be showing? Now, I had a friend from Pittsburgh. We had some friends from Pittsburgh come over, and they were just to see Moses, you know, down at Sight and Sound. And they said, oh, it was great. And I said, well, how'd they do the water? Well, you have to go see. So, you know, I guess I'll have to spend the money in my own town to see it. But I had mentioned to you a few sermons back that I like The Chosen. I've only seen the, what is it, section one, because I don't know how we get to section two and three. But we've only seen section one, and, you know, there was that scene, and I'll remind you of it as I spoke. There's that scene at the wedding feast in Cana, you know, which John calls the first sign. And you think about weddings, and weddings are a wonderful time. They really are a lot of fun. I was telling these people yesterday that if you ever get invited to a New York wedding, you got to go, because you're never experiencing anything like it. Let me tell you on the side, because I got time, right? Let me tell you on the side that, you know, I was talking to somebody, you know, who there was a wedding happening in Lancaster, and I think the bride was from Lancaster and had the wedding all arranged and whatever, pretty happy with it, but was marrying a gentleman from New York. And the New York family sort of saw what was going to happen at the wedding and said, whoa, 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 we're going to have to add some more money here, because we got people coming from New York, and this isn't enough. So we're going to be more, and that sort of thing. So I was telling these people. But in any case, weddings are wonderful occasions, although our culture has changed a lot. If you listen carefully to people, you know, there's a lot of people, they don't want to be invited to the wedding. You know, it's an interruption of their time. Now, if you know a wedding I could be invited to in New York, I'm driving up. You know, it's eat all the food that there is. You might think that I'm all about food. I'm not really, but it's a joyous occasion. And the bride and the families want it to go exactly right. I always felt the pressure as a minister during a wedding. They were more pressure than anything else I did was a wedding, because it's got to be exactly right. You know, you can't make any mistakes and that sort of thing. And I get so uptight. I'd have every word written out, you know, because, and I'd still miss one. But in this wedding at Cana, they were running out of wine. And that's a disaster. And I guess they were guessing that Mary, the mother of Jesus, you know, that they were family friends and this sort of thing. At least that's what the movie is depicting. And she's aware of this, and she goes to find her son, Jesus. And she tells him the situation. He basically, in the film, says, well, my time's not come. But she pleads with him. And he finally breaks down, he goes, and he arranges whatever, all the pots and everything he's got to do so that this works out. And when the miracle is done, and the toastmaster or the guy that's running the show, you know, drinks the wine and said, there's never been a wine like this. Now, that's a whole sermon by itself, right? There's never been a wine like this. And everybody's merry and joyous and whatever. And what they depict is Mary's on one end of the room and here's Jesus. And Mary looks over and says, thank you. And Jesus just smiles. That's when I wrote in my journal, because I never thought about it. And it's obviously stuck with me that I wanted to talk about it. I always pray when they, you know, the minister's got to pray at the weddings. I always pray that he just fills up the joy, you know, of the experience. And when you're looking at that chosen thing, there's other experiences there. I mean, he's Peter's mother-in-law is sick and he's in the room and they're amazed at what he does. Or he goes to a dinner, you know, Sabbath dinner and whatever, and says, no, you read, and this sort of thing, and just graces the dinner with his presence. And he, you know, amazes the disciples with the catch of fish. And it's just amazing. And I think they do a good job with it. One of the many scriptures I love, and I memorize a lot of scripture, but one of my favorites comes from Psalm 16, where I put the Lord at my right side. Because he is at my right side, I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad. My whole being rejoices. My soul rests secure. But the very last verse of that psalm, I repeat often, where David says, you have made known to me the path of life. In your presence, there is fullness of joy. At your right side are pleasures forevermore. And I think to myself with that verse, why don't we preach that over and over and over? Why don't we tell people over and over and over and over and over and over that God has made known to us the path of life? We don't have to wonder about it. We don't have to be confused about it. We don't have to go searching high and low about it. We don't have to. He made known to us, and in his presence, it's just fullness of joy. And you know something else? At his right side, there are pleasures. Do you like that word? I like that word. There are pleasures forevermore. I mean, we're going to go to the surreal house, and I don't know how you're going to feel, but it's going to be pretty pleasurable. It's going to be a lot of fun. At least that's what I envision. What are you thinking about? That's what I think about. So I want to talk about briefly, joy in his presence. That is something that the disciples experienced, did they not? Think about these disciples. Joy in his presence. You got to believe that is what they experienced every step of every pathway that they walked with him. Just incredible what would be going on in their heart. Just to be in his presence. Can you imagine that? There was a few sermons back that I tried to get us to understand and believe. We dwell in his presence all the time. It's really no different. But let's just give it up for the disciples that they, you know, Jesus walked the paths, and they're in his presence from the moment that they wake up to the moment that they go to sleep and more. Don't we sing that song somewhere? You know, that they're in the presence of the Lord. Wow. The God of the universe, who makes known to us the path of life. You see, joy is one of those words that's hard to get our arms around. You know, if there's a word that it's hard to get your arms around, you know, it's always a good idea to go to the dictionary. That's not a bad thing to do. You know, just go to the dictionary and see what it has to say. It's not always good in the dictionary, but you just go there anyway. Dictionary. Emotion evoked by well-being, okay, or the prospect of possessing what one desires. Either you're in a state of well-being or you're in a state of well-being because you have the prospect of experiencing something that you desire. And even though you don't have it in your possession yet, it's there. You're possessing it before you have it. And there's a sense of well-being about it. I like that when you think about it. A sense of well-being. When you think about a sense of well-being, you know immediately that you're talking about more than things. It's more than things. You know, David also wrote, you know, there's many saying, who shall show us anything good? Lift the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have placed more joy in my heart than they when they have abundance of grain and wine. Just to be in your presence, you put more joy in my heart. Who will show us any good? Just lift up the light of your face upon us. Place that joy in our heart. You see, it goes deeper than things. The disciples, they lived in a relationship to him that they couldn't help but be amazed. Shouldn't we be amazed by the fact that he's still alive? And he's still involved in the affairs of our life. And we can live every moment in his presence. It's not hard. I think about him all day long. I multitask. I'm working while I'm thinking about him. You can too. Joy in his presence. You know, it's interesting that Jesus, when he is talking to the disciples about I am the vine, you are the branches, abide in me and I in you. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do nothing. And at the few verses down from that, when he's teaching them, he says, I have taught you these things. I have taught you these things that my joy may be in you. And that your joy would be full. That your joy would be full. I'm giving you this. Jesus, I'm giving you this so that your joy is full. Not half, but full. You see, here's the issue. What we are told in Scripture from Jesus in those words, or you can go to David, where he says, in your presence there's fullness of joy, and at your right side are pleasures forevermore. All of that is totally opposite of what people think. And in fact, it is not what I was ever taught to think growing up in the church. That's not how it was approached. Tell me if I'm wrong, Bonnie, because you grew up in the same church. You know, that in our church, I didn't hear what I'm just telling you. I heard about how we need to keep these commandments and don't do this, and you gotta walk the straight line, and God's ready to, at least you got the impression, God's ready to drop the hammer on you, and this sort of thing. Did we grow up that way? What's that?
Mostly.
And that's totally opposite what I just read or recited. Totally. And the world thinks that God's just sitting there and he made us so that he could punish some people and make it hard on people in life and just make people's lives miserable, and he doesn't care. And that's what the world thinks. We don't have to help them in their thinking. We can think differently. We should think differently. Jesus seeks the fullness of joy for our life. Do you think that might bring a smile to him? You know, in his presence, I just wrote words that came to my mind. Presence. You know, if we're in his presence, it's filled with wonder. This is way in excitement and confidence, peace, boldness, self-worth, fruitfulness that he promised. I mean, to be in his presence is to just have an amazing experience of well-being in our life that things can't touch when you think about it. And it's not squelching our desires, you know, because, you know, there might be desires of your heart that you can express to God and you can talk it over with him, and he never, you know, throws a wet blanket on those desires. And so you can start living in them even if you don't have it at the moment. And that's fullness of joy. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that through the power of the Holy Spirit you may rejoice in hope. He placed us in a hope. You hear me talk about it? He placed us in a reality of hope, and we can begin living in it. And he wants us to experience it. Even maybe some of it's waiting for us, whatever, but it's still there. It's a reality that's there, and we can live in it in all its fullness and all its glory and all its power and wonder and excitement that it promises to give. Yeah, I want to live that way. The world needs to hear that from us. That Jesus, when we're looking at a person, he wants, I don't know what the world's told you, but he wants you to have fullness of joy. He came that you might have life abundantly. Jesus is at work in our life. He placed us in a hope. He works for our goodness. That's why I told Cindy, sing that song, His Goodness is Running After. It's running after me. Do you believe it? Bible says His goodness is. You know, isn't it Psalm 20? Surely His goodness will, and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. You know that. You memorized that. Surely His goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. He is working for our fruitfulness. Abide in me and I in you, that you might bear much fruit. He wants us to experience fruitfulness in our life. He doesn't want to deprive us of it. He's working that in our life. He's working for our victory. Isaiah 55, come, you know, all who are thirsty. You know, eat what is good. Just look at some of the pieces of Isaiah 55. Eat what is good. Delight yourself in rich food. Why don't we see that word? Rich, are we going to delight in rich food? How much did that cost you, Chris? I'm just having fun. You know, in the same song, for you will go out with joy and be led forth in peace. Psalm 36, how precious is your steadfast love, O Lord. The children of mankind find refuge under the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house. They drink from the river of your delights, for with you, being God, is a fountain of life. in your light, we do see light. God's not trying to hold back from us. We're children of the King. We're His household. We share in the inheritance. It belongs to us. He's a King that wants to enrich His people with all these things, that your joy may be full. That's an overarching sense of well-being. But does it include things? Does it include things? I mean, I'm talking about an overarching sense of well-being. But does it include things? Yeah, I know Timothy was told by Paul. He says, you know, you warn those people that are rich not to put their hope in the uncertainty of riches. Okay, we love that part. This is all in the same verse. And boy, we can preach that. And it's true. We should not put our hope in the uncertainty of riches. If you got your money in the stock market, I mean, you're feeling a little sick. You know, you're like this. You never know what to think. Pretty uncertain because a bunch of rascals are running the show there and don't care one iota about you and how it affects you. I'm just telling you the truth. So, yes, you know, it is true. Don't put your hope in the uncertainty of riches. But, same sentence, but on God who richly provides us everything for our enjoyment. Now, you know that's there, right? It's in the same verse. I mean, we can hammer hard in the rich. I just did something. I did a post. Listen, let me just, I'm not trying to be political, but I did this in a post, and I got to respond to some lady because it occurred to me, with all the years that I've watched our political arena, and, oh, we're going to tax the rich, you know, they're not paying their fair share, and it's the same political nonsense all the time. I'm just going to ask you one question, you consider it. How has taxing the rich ever made you ever richer? What nonsense. It's easy to pick on the rich. I'm not beating the drum for them, but regardless of what they do in Washington, it doesn't make you richer. It doesn't make the poor middle class. It doesn't do that. It's nonsense. He richly provides us everything for our enjoyment. You know, Ecclesiastes, you know, there's nothing better for a person than to eat and to drink and find enjoyment in one's work. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can find enjoyment apart from God? See, it's just putting God in the right place. And you can have it all. You can have it all. What is it that brings a smile to the face of Jesus? I would suggest to you that it is Him seeing joy in our life. He is not making that a struggle. It is as much His will as anything else is His will, is that your joy would be made full. Oh, how abundant is His goodness. You know, isn't that something we should be experiencing daily in our life? The abundance of His goodness. The disciples did. For the disciples, it became a world of wonders. I don't know that He wants to deprive you and me of a world of wonders. Should not our experience be the same? Would He deprive us of the same joy that they experienced? I don't think so. If we live in the presence of Jesus, and we absolutely do, what isn't possible, really? What isn't possible? And that's fullness of joy. May the Lord bless your hearts and minds.